This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehayas Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So she really has an ability to go face to face with some of these combatants and earn their respect in the moment. Has been very successful as a result and has worked to try to share some of those skills with others through her work at the Center for Stabilization that she trains at.
That's Rusty Barber of the U.S. Institute of Peace on how the recipient of this year's USIP Women Peace Building Award has negotiated, persuaded, and inspired the people to lay down their weapons in the DRC. Details coming up. Also, the head of the UN climate talks presses nations to move fast to deliver a pact on tackling global warming. And the World Health Organization warns Sudan's health and humanitarian crisis is deepening. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The head of UN climate talks pressed the nations today to move fast to deliver an unprecedented pact on tackling global warming. This as negotiators scrambled to bridge differences over phasing out fossil fuels. COP28 President Sultan Al Jaber has set the ambitious goal of wrapping up the summit in Dubai on schedule Tuesday. With ministers now in town, Jaber said he wanted negotiators to produce a new draft deal today. Despite disagreements over the future of fossil fuels, Jaber voiced optimism that the talks hosted by the oil-rich United Arab Emirates can finish with a historic agreement. Climate campaigners have viewed Jaber, head of UAE national oil firm ADNOC, with suspicion, but he has sought to assure skeptics by stating that a phase down of fossil fuels was inevitable. A handful of countries, including oil giant Saudi Arabia and major crude consumer China, have resisted, including language on a phase out of fossil fuels in the final text. The U.S. Institute of Peace today announced the recipient of its 2023 Women Peace Building Award, which is given annually to honor women of extraordinary commitment and leadership in their communities. The winner is Petroni Vawika of the Democratic Republic of the Congo for her work in building peace, resolving conflict, and convincing people to lay down their weapons. Rusty Barber, USIP's Director of Strategic Partnerships, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that Vawika has some very specific, well-honed skills.
She has the ability to talk eye-to-eye, toe-to-toe, with some of these armed combatants. And she's done it for many years. She is not without fear, but she's fearless, if you understand the difference. She's willing to go into places and to put herself in harm's way in order to bring an end to violence or to negotiate the release of hostages, which she's done on numerous occasions. So she really has an ability to go face to face with some of these combatants and earn their respect in the moment. It has been very successful as a result and has worked to try to share some of those skills with others through her work at the Center for Stabilization that she trains at.
One of the people that was, I think, selecting the finalists, you know, she said that Petroni is an extraordinarily brave woman working tenaciously over these 3 decades for change in a male-dominated culture. Can you give us a little background about what it's like in the DRC as a woman? They're trying to come face-to-face, like you say, with these men. And what's driving all this fighting, that violence that's been going on in DRC?
She comes from the Ituri region, which is in eastern Congo. And that, of course, as you know, is where a lot of the violence, most of the violence in the country is taking place. It's a very rugged region. And she grew up there, and she began, as I said, about 30 years ago doing this work. And it was actually her children, because she was very concerned about her own safety as a mother, and it was her own children who convinced her that she could actually do this work in that part of Congo. But it has experienced cycles of violence in that region. Women and children are often targeted and kidnapped in many cases. It is an extremely violent region, and Patrini has a demonstrated ability to operate in some of the most conflicted parts of even that province, which generally is a violent region where much of the conflict has been taking place. Yeah, so that's why she was selected. In particular, even though we received over 150 nominations from 42 countries, and the other three finalists were also extraordinarily accomplished women in the peacebuilding field, but it was Petrini's specific experience and abilities and accomplishments on that front line, going toe-to-toe with some of these combatants, that allowed us to select her this year.
Her award was announced today at a ceremony at the U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa. So now what happens? What does she get for winning? And is it a monetary award?
Yep, she receives a monetary award for her accomplishments. And she also, along with the other three finalists, will be invited to Washington for a ceremony here in Washington early next year. That will be an award ceremony at the U.S. Institute of Peace headquarters in D.C. It'll be quite an affair. But beyond that, the engagement does not simply end with a ceremony and the award. Our Africa team will engage with her. They're already doing that now. The Institute has a Women, Peace, and Security program that is extremely well positioned to, it's already engaged in DRC, but will expand. And of course, Petroni and her organization, she actually has two organizations she's founded, will be very close partners of USIP as we continue to expand our work in DRC and in the region.
That's Rusty Barber, USIP's Director of Strategic Partnership. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam in Washington today. The governor of Nigeria's Kaduna State Friday criticized Nigerian defense officials after they said terrorists had embedded themselves in the village that was hit by a drone strike Sunday, killing at least 87 people. Governor Uba Sani said the statement was careless and lacked empathy. Meanwhile, rights groups Amnesty International says the military is trying to suppress atrocities. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Kaduna State Governor Uba Sani spoke to Lagos-based Channels Television Friday. He said the claim by Nigerian defense authorities that the military was targeting terrorists in Tundunbiri village contradicted initial position of state authorities and the Nigerian army on the matter. Sani said the statement was callous and called for an investigation.
We would not slow down in insisting that this investigation will be concluded within a time frame that is set. The rebuilding of the community will start in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Residents of Tundunbiri had gathered to mark the birthday of the Muslim prophet Muhammad on Sunday night when the airstrike conducted by the drone occurred. The Nigerian army said it was an accident. This week, Nigerian President Bola Tinubu called for a thorough investigation and promised to hold officials accountable. But Amnesty International says authorities frequently make such promises without taking action. Isa Sanusi is director at Amnesty International in Nigeria.
The first thing the government should have done is for them to establish an independent inquiry that will reveal the truth. I don't give any iota of regard for that claim that people will be punished. I think it's just a empty political statement. We have been hearing this before, after every such incident.
Amnesty International accused authorities of trying to cover up human rights atrocities by putting out contradictory explanations.
But what we are saying is that, all these things, all these explanations are unnecessary at this point. The priority of the military, if at all they have any respect for human life, is for them to emphasize investigation. That is why we said that we are suspecting that there is an attempt to cover up, which we believe is a deliberate, utter disdain.
Security analyst Chidio Meje suspects an intelligence failure is to blame, but says only an inquiry can learn the truth.
This is not the first time we've had this kind of accident. So I think they should let go the issue about the statement and investigate what really went down.
Last December, An airstrike by the Nigerian Air Force killed 64 people in northwest Zamfara state. And 1 month later, a military airstrike killed nearly 40 herders in Nasarawa state near the capital. Critics say authorities have yet to hold anyone responsible for those killings. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Egypt is gearing up for a presidential election expected to give incumbent Abdel Fattah el-Sisi a third term in office. From Sunday through Tuesday, Egyptians aged 15 and above will be able to cast their ballots for one of four candidates. Former Army Chief Sisi in power since he deposed elected Islamist President Mohamed Morsi in 2013 and three relative unknowns. However, political observers point to Sisi's record of receiving over 96% of the vote in 2014 and 2018. The country's two main opposition figures are in prison or awaiting trial. One presidential candidate has promised to control inflation by abolishing the value-added tax on basic foods. Another would release all prisoners of conscience, estimated at thousands since Sisi came to power, and abolish repressive laws. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In Ghana, National STEAM Day was born out of the need for young people in the country to have digital skills as the world experiences rapid technological growth. Made up of a consortium of leading science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, STEM educators in Ghana, this state-of-the-art event prepares students for a rapidly evolving job market that demands science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematical skills. VOA's Pauline Diho spoke with Eugene Bowadi, founder of STEAM She Can, and one of the organizers of National STEAM Day in Accra, Ghana.
You run an organization that tries to empower young people across Ghana in the area of STEM education. Bring us up to speed.
We've run a couple of events and competitions just to help the children, as you said, in STEM and art and leadership education across the country. So we've done National STEM Day, which is the first ever to happen here in Ghana. It's done across the world, but this is the first time organized in Ghana, and we're glad to partner with a few other companies who came on board to do it. We've also had some STEM programs for kids, especially those who finished with their junior high school. So after junior high, they stay for about 3-4 months before they go to senior high. And so we thought it wise to run a program within that time for them to get some skills before going in secondary school. And so we've done that, and the students will be graduating this coming Monday. So we're excited about that.
I like your take on that. How about for those kids who are kind of like shy and they're trying to figure out how to do this? Is this a field that any person can get in? Do you have to have certain special skills to be able to learn about robotics, about coding, about AI now?
So nobody is born with any skill. We all come to learn, even how to talk, how to walk. Okay, and it's the same with a skill like robotics and coding. And so when the kids come, we just start with the basics. We let them play around. And that's where play learning is so, so important, because that's when they feel relaxed and they're able to bring on their curiosity and creativity to do so much more. And without knowing, they are learning. And that's what we do with these children. So no, they don't need any skill at all. Come as you are. We have trained the teachers, not just in skill, but also in the delivery of the learning, how to identify that this child is maybe a visual person. So do more of that. This child is more touchy. This child wants more experiment. And so we combine all that so that the children have the greatest experience. So we don't just...
You're part of the organizers. You organized this STEAM Fest. How did it go? What did you learn from that STEAM Fest?
It was really fantastic. Or as we say, it was fantastic. So we invited students, we invited schools and parents and families to come around, where they first had a tour of the Museum of Science and Technology. So they saw the artifacts that were in there, which were diverse. And then they will come up to where we had the exhibition. But we are also conscious to segregate or put into different booths the different aspects of STEM or STEAM. So for science, we had X Technologies handling it. We had technology, which was handled by IoT, engineering handled by Bountiful, art handled by Kids at Home School and Kenya Foundation. And then finally, the math, which was handled by the Femme Afrique Math Queens. So the kids had a feel of every bit of STEAM, what we mean by it. And then they had a dress up where you save the profession that you want, and then we give you an attire for it, and then we take a photo shoot, which was amazing. There were also competitions, the Robo Challenge, we had the eSports Challenge as well. And so it was a fun day, and the kids learned so much. We are so grateful, even for our volunteers.
Ghana has been on the cutting edge of trying to promote STEAM, STEM education in schools. What does it take to do that? Because they seem to be pushing their schools in that direction. You are part of that network. How much work has been done so far?
Everything starts with leadership. And one thing I'm grateful for in this industry is having a minister who speaks STEAM, or it's encouraging schools and other people to do STEM education and STEM careers. So that has opened a door for us already. And now you have organizations coming in. The only challenge we have, unfortunately, is the funding and still lack of knowledge when you go into the rural areas. But it's taking collaboration, it's taking a leader who believes in it. And so wherever he goes, he speaks about it. That's Honorable Edichim. And we, the NGOs and other companies, pushing the agenda and having parents buy into it, teachers buy into it, schools buying into it. And so that is what is moving us. It is not just talk, it is the action on the ground that is moving Ghana.
That was Eugenia Bowadi, founder of STEAM She Can, speaking with VOA's Paul Indiho. The World Health Organization warns Sudan's health and humanitarian crisis is deepening amid ongoing fighting, mass displacement, and disease outbreaks. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since rival military leaders plunged Sudan into conflict in mid-April, the country's Ministry of Health reports more than 12,000 people have been killed and over 33,000 injured. Additionally, the World Health Organization says Sudan is facing the world's largest displacement crisis. It reports nearly 6.8 million people have fled their homes, seeking safety in Sudan or in neighboring countries. The WHO representative in Sudan, Mohammed Taufik Mashal, says this mass population movement increases people's vulnerability to diseases, malnutrition, gender-based violence, and acute mental health distress. Speaking to journalists from Port Sudan, he says efforts are underway to contain the spread of recent outbreaks of cholera, measles, and dengue.
We are working with the federal and state ministries of health, with other UN agencies, with our implementing partners, in order to sustain essential, most needed, and life-saving health services to the most needy people of Sudan. They need these services now more than ever.
WHO reports aid delivery to some parts of Sudan, especially in the capital Khartoum and in Darfur, is very difficult because of the violence as Sudan's army and the rival Rapid Support Forces militia battle for control of the country. Mashal says the situation in Darfur is of particular concern. He notes many hospitals are inaccessible and insecurity prevents humanitarian aid from being safely delivered. He says 43% of Sudan's population is at risk of food insecurity. Also, 3.2 million children under 5 reportedly are acutely malnourished, including 700,000 who are severely acutely malnourished, a condition that can lead to death if not treated.
Just 100,000 of them are severely acute malnourished with medical complication, which require hospitalization and hospital care through. So that is why WHO activated 20 stabilization centers across the states, WHO providing medicine over there, as well as operational support to these stabilization centers.
Michelle says lack of international support is making it increasingly more difficult for WHO to provide essential health care to the millions in need. He says only $9 million of WHO's $98 million health emergency response plan has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres told an emergency meeting of the Security Council today that he invoked Article 19 of the UN Charter for the first time since 1971 because there is a high risk of the total collapse of the humanitarian support system in Gaza. That article allows a UN chief to raise threats he sees to international peace and security. Guterres warned the Gaza Strip at a breaking point and people are at risk of starvation. He said the UN anticipates this would result in a complete breakdown of public order and increased pressure for mass displacement into Egypt. The Council was scheduled to meet late today to vote on a resolution demanding an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. The United States, Israel's closest ally, has not supported a ceasefire, saying the Hamas militants do not want lasting peace and would use a longer ceasefire to rearm. Israel has designated a safe zone in southern Gaza, but aid organizations say it is widening military offensive has left Palestinians packed together in dire conditions. The UN estimates 1.9 million people have been displaced and most lack food, water, and medicine. Around 1,200 people have died on the Israeli side, mainly civilians killed during Hamas' October 7th attack that triggered the war. The health ministry in Hamas-run Gaza today said the death toll in the territory is nearly 17,500, and about 70% of those killed are women and children. Also today, UN monitors said Israeli troops reportedly detained men and boys from the age of 15 in northern Gaza. An Israeli official said security forces were questioning the detainees, who he said were picked up in Hamas strongholds to determine whether they were members of the militant group.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.